family, Isaac, Rebecca, Esau, and Jacob. That's how we should refer to them. Except God didn't. God always referred to them as Jacob and Esau. Because God does not respect human ideas. And the fancy term is primogeniture, the firstborn. So, another famine hits. They moved a little northwest toward the coast, back into the territory of Abimelech and the Philistines. And then he goes and follows his father's pattern. Isaac moves in, settles down, but right after the tripartite blessing is reiterated, God appears to him, I will be with you. Land, manifold blessings, the whole, couldn't have been an expression then, but 9 yards. All nations blessed through you, through your descendants. That was the Abrahamic blessing. That's what God said. And then your whole line is going to complete this. But, all right, back off. So, this being our general area of operations, he used to live here in a rather arid place. He moved up to the more fertile coastal valleys. Much better growing land, much better pasture land. But then he runs into a problem. With the promise and the reminder given, obey as your father, keep the faith, keep my commands, keep the charge. That wasn't the first Visa card, I assure you. The line of promise is to and shall be faithful. Then we get this parallel with Dad. The locals inquire about this beautiful woman in his household. That would be Rebecca. Not this again. Seriously? Did you not learn from your dad? Oh wait, you weren't there. The same sister ploy. Hey, this beauty you got in there, what? Oh, she's my sister. Sort of. Technically, they are related. It's a familial relationship because Abraham did not want his chosen son, Isaac, to marry a local. So, then Abimelech finds out. Duh. Sorry. Two teenage for you. Again, fear of consequence caused the problem. In Isaac's mind, there's no fear of God in this territory, so if they think she's my wife, all they have to do is kill me and then they can have her.
Is that why we have that term in English, the fruit falls not far from the tree?
Yeah, this whatever fruit he was, it bounced once.
Yeah.
And rooted. Let it.
Would, by doing that, have put his sister in greater danger?
You think?
Well, yeah, if they asked her, oh, that's your sister, then, oh, good.
Yeah, good.
She's open to us.
Yeah, we'll take you out now. Mm-hmm. And Abimelech, thankfully, was smarter than that. He says, what are you doing? And then he realizes, no, this is his wife. And he just puts his foot down, essentially, lays out the law for the surrounding turf. Stay away from this pair. Just get completely away. Problem. God is with Isaac. They're living in a new area, but we're told scripturally, 12, 13, 14, etc., God blessed him abundantly. Everything he sowed came up bumper crop. all the sheep, all the goats, all the cattle. Boom! Fertility, fruitfulness. All of a sudden, his herds are overrunning the place. Yeah. The locals are saying, hold it. Hold it. We gave you a little corner and you took 12 square miles. We gave you a little. We said, okay, yeah, you can settle over there. And then all of a sudden, boom. And it didn't take long in terms of years before they were overflowing. We're told that the Philistines had already negated that non-aggression pact. Remember they gave that ceremonial treaty with Abraham and his kin. There were disputes of water rights, and they came together and they settled it out, and okay, we'll stay on our side of the line, you all stay on your side of the line, and you know, the Mason-Dixon line had nothing to do with it. But that was okay. But we're told they filled in the wells that were on the other side of the line. And they had begun to encroach into that territory. And as they're filling in the wells, Abraham's dead. We don't care. We'll go where we want. Finally, Abimelech says, look, you are so overwhelming. You did this group, and your family and your extensions and your herds have gotten so big, there ain't room in this town for both of us. Move, leave. So Isaac leaves. He packs up, lock, stock, and barrel. Goat, kid, sheep, lamb. And he moves. He didn't go very far. He just got far enough to get where there was more space. He moves back into where he grew up. Now, this would have been the territory where all those stopped up wells were. But he reopens them. Says, yeah, there used to be a well here. He redug it. Okay, excellent. He honors all the old names that his dad had given him. Says, here we go. We're here, we got water. Then they discover a new artesian. Remember the shape of this land. He had moved back in toward the more hilly area. It's rocky up there. You grow stuff by hard work. You just don't throw seeds out in the grass and have it pop up. Which is what they could do on the coastal plain because there was well watered. When the rains came, the sediments washed down. This was fertile ground down below. Now he's up at the hills. He found a new artesian well. That's that term spring. That means once you tap it, it flows.
Bum, 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 bum.
That created a quarrel with the folks who had thought that was their stuff. Hey, that's not fair. You found better water than we have. So, we won. So we named the well Essek, which means quarrel. Not to, beat a dead horse, but that was pretty obvious. So he moves again, picks up everything, slides out a little further into the hills, a little further into the drier land. Another artesian spring he finds. Wow! You know, part of me said like Popeye, what a coinkydinks, right? You guys won't get that. I'm sorry. you didn't grow up with that. But anyway, when God is watching over you, you find water. Right? What's the song? Like streams in the desert? Yeah, this is what's happening. They open up another one, and now there's a new stream in this desert. Another conflict with the neighbors. Well, doggone, how many times we gotta go through this? And because this one had more conflict, he named it Sitna. Guess what that Hebrew root is? That Hebrew root is used for the adversary. So this well, this artesian spring, its name Satan.
Excuse me?
Yeah. It was ugly. The conflict keeps building. So what does he do? He puts his foot down and moves. You know what? This time Rebecca's got to be saying again. Honey, when are you going to stand up? Be a man. No. He is preventing war. He is still outnumbered by the locals. He was smart enough to say, if we just move again, all right. A little further out, up in this down south into the drier area of the mountainous region of Palestine. The rest of the household must think he's nuts. You taking all our holdings, all our flocks, everything like this further into the desert? I mean, yeah, it's hilly and rocky, and there's sheltered coves, and there's the occasional stream during seasonal rains, and okay, stuff will grow. It'll support goats, at least. Whoops! Another artesian spring. Turns out this was a reopening of another one. But this time, nobody argued. This time, they got far enough away. This time, it gets a new name. Rehoboth. Spacious! We have enough space for everybody now. Plenty of room for everybody. Now, we'll be fruitful in the land. And they were. Every move guided by God's Spirit, every move landed them near an artesian spring in a land of very limited water. Yes. Is that a miracle or what?
Yes.
Yeah. It's not a normal what, I'll tell you that right now.
He's fulfilling the command given to Adam, be fruitful and multiply and subdue the earth. That's what's happening.
Exactly. Ron, you had something?
I'm just curious. I mean, every time they move, they find a well. But wasn't the other people who had lived there smart enough to find a well? Or not?
No.
They all kidding?
He's God's. He was living well.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I can't believe you said that.
Well, sometimes I can't believe what comes out of me either. Obviously, the locals weren't living well. They couldn't find them. But there it is. He moves a little further, spreads, doesn't go too far from this other one, comes back into the region of Beersheba. His dad named that one originally. And remember what his dad and why his dad called it Beersheba? The well of the oak, or slightly different character in the Hebrew language, and both of them appear in the documents. The well of the seven. Because there were seven animals offered in sacrifice to solidify the original water rights treaty with the Philistines. Abimelech and all. That plays a part. See, God has a great sense of humor. You know, he brings Abraham through all this. Now, through all these different moves and whatnot, he brings Isaac right back into a similar position. God appears to him that night. The promise is reiterated. I am the God of your father. I am with you. I will bless you. I will multiply you for Abraham's sake. Not Isaac's? Well, he is the promised child, but he doesn't own it yet. There's other things bubbling under the surface. But Isaac built an altar and worships God there. This is the first one we're told about where he began to own the relationship with the one living God. Until that time, everything had been through the line of Abraham. Because he was Abraham's kid, all this good stuff kept happening. Now, he built an altar and worships in his own right. Scripturally, it's like he barely finished celebrating at the altar when Abimelech and crew show up again. There'd been all this acrimony. There had been all this fussing and tangling and quarreling over water rights. Again. We're doing daddy's pattern. Again. Like you said, the fruit did not fall very far from that tree. Matter of fact, I think that tree sat in a basin and anything that fell rolled right back in. Isaac, what on earth are you guys doing here? You hate me. You chased me out. You drove me out. Probably with sticks, rocks, and rabid dogs. Abimelech, we aren't blind. We aren't blind. We see with every move, boom, a wellspring of water.
We know a good thing. We know. You got seven going, we're going to take part.
We know a good thing, and we want to get in on it. Just this morning, I was reading John chapter 4. Jesus was transiting from the area around Jerusalem back up into Galilee, and instead of going across the Jordan to stay out of Samaria, which they didn't like each other, he went straight north and sat down at the well that Isaac kid dug, Jacob's well, famous in that area, up to and even beyond the time of Christ. It is still there, you can still drink water from it. It's pure, it's sweet, it is crystalline. I was amazed. I was 12, but it made an impression. Yes, ma'am.
You went there?
I went there on a family vacation when we used to live overseas.
Wow.
My father's rule was when I get my annual vacation, we don't go back to the States, we go someplace else. And Israel was one of the places we visited. It was very, very cool. Yeah. But Abimelech and his people are looking around going, everything this guy touches turns to, not gold, flowing water. In a desert area, flowing water is better than gold. Yes. You can't drink gold. Well, you can, but at least it's serious health problems. You know, gold powder in anything, and pretty soon you've got major organs deciding to quit and leave the country. Yeah. We know a good thing when we see it. We want to treat it. We want to make sure that you don't get so big you can swallow us in a single bite. If we're allies, it won't happen. So Isaac throws a party. Well, they called it a feast back then. But he invites Philistine leadership in. He invites the leadership of his tribal people. And they have this big feast to celebrate this pending peace treaty. Next morning, they give their oaths. Critical word there, that oath thing. Everything returns to, and there's quotations around the word normal, because how can things be normal when you've got rather contentious and jealous people as an ally? I forget, oh goodness, it's a famous quote, and I forget who said it. Somebody's probably going to trigger on it, but keep your friends close. Keep your enemies close.
Yeah. Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln. I'll take your word for it. Your face looks honest, right? And because, yeah, Leonard.
I'm just noticing, the shoe is on the other foot.
Yes.
At first, it's Isaac had to make the agreement with Abimelech.
Yes.
Oh, now Abimelech.
Now God has
brought things. How the tide has turned.
Right back around, and I think tide is a good word to use because all these wells keep popping up. Did you have something?
Just that the scripture says that they left peacefully and they let him go, so they didn't like.
It wasn't militant.
It wasn't.
It was disgruntled, though, because they were realizing, shoot, you just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and there's no room for all the sheep and the goats, and pasture land is running out, and water's running out, so go away. Look further. Further. I can still see you. Yes, Virginia, please.
You keep your enemies close. Why are you supposed to be far
or enemies? Abraham Lincoln, when he quoted that, it was in the middle of the American Civil War. And the operation behind that was be close with your friends, but keep your enemies closer so you always know what they're up to and they don't catch you by surprise.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so keep your eye very closely, even more so on your enemies. Because your friends, your allies, they're with you. These people against you, it's good to have really good intelligence on what they're doing, so examine them.
Okay.
So maybe in this modern day, you keep your surrounding closer, your people closer, but keep the negotiation with your enemy.
Mm-hmm. That's a good another good way to look at analogy. Yes, Ron.
Well, the system where I think is that the Hebrews moved to Egypt, given this certain land. They grew so much that the Egyptians go, hey, it's the same thoughts. You can take us over. You are slaves. We made you slaves. These people will go, you guys are so big, you can take us over. Let's make a treaty.
Instead.
Yeah, instead.
Yeah. The Egyptians handled it a little differently, but you're sneaking ahead in the story. Yeah. The Egyptians use domination in the not too distant future. Philistines said, let's make peace now. Because if friction comes, nobody wins. Which is why Isaac kept moving. He was preventing that real friction. He just, okay, we're getting grumbling about the water rights again, so we'll move. Comes down to a well moved. He renames the well, the reopened well, Sheba. Bear Sheba. The well of the seven. The well of the oaths. Once again, he held and honored the name his father had given it.
You know, Jeff, interesting. I think really what the Philistines, after three artesian wells opening up, I said, wait a minute, this guy's God is greater than our God.
Oh, you're not kidding.
Yeah, we need to be friends with him because we need his God to be on our side.
Exactly. And in this era of history, gods, little g, were believed to be tied to a locality. Wherever their statue, wooden pole, whatever it was, they controlled only the surrounding area and the people that worshipped them. Isaac's God is wherever Isaac goes. And the Philistines, like you say, that's a revolting development. So we're better off alive than we are adverse. Yeah, that was how the way it worked. When all the dust settles, they have their treaty in place, God reaffirms his promise again. Remember, I am one who holds that the unifying of theory. Okay. I'll finish my sentence and then come back to you, Felicia.
Sure.
Unified theory of the Old Testament is God's promise. Promise flows throughout. Felicia.
I don't think Abraham Lincoln said that.
He didn't.
Oh, it wasn't
Sun Tzu.
Sun Tzu? Yeah. Oh, okay.
Lincoln may have quoted
him. He may have quoted it. Ancient Chinese warrior philosopher who wrote a book called The Art of War, but the same strategic thinking applies. That's what he was saying.
Abraham Lincoln was more politically minded, and he believed in trying to keep peace before going to try to defeat.
And he did everything he could to do that, but it was not to be.
Right.
Right. Thank you. Now that we settled that, no, that's...
I'm sorry.
No. When there's a teaching situation, if I spout off and promulgate something that's inaccurate, then that's bad. That's my bad. That's on me. I shouldn't be doing that to y'all. But thank you.
But you're human.
Oh. I so hoped I was getting out of that. You're 100% right, and I'm 100% human. You nailed that right on the head, Debbie. And I find out about it every day. New ache, new pain, new mistake, you know. This treaty structure matched almost exactly with the one that Abraham and his father had set up, and it proves out the continuity of God's promise through this line. Always the line of promise. Always. And now it's reconfirmed. It's through you, Isaac. And then we get the last couple of verses in this particular chapter, and it seems like it has absolutely nothing to do with the rest. Esau takes a couple of wives.
One of his wife even is his.
Yeah. Yeah, and later he does, he goes one step farther later, and we're going to open into that next week as well. But this time, he manages to alienate both parents. We're told scripturally, Isaac and Rebekah were embittered toward him. Not only because he was a dingbat, married two roughly at the same time, but they were locals. They did not have the God of Abraham as their God. They had whatever local deity was servicing that tree or that hillside or that whatever it was. Yeah, okay. Maybe Isaac's going to figure out that Esau's not the angelic son he was thought to be. Debbie?
I can't help but wonder all of this, I mean, there's so many wives. Do you think the Mormons got any of that from this? I mean, I'm just saying.
Yes.
Okay.
Joseph Smith patterned some of the things that he wrote into the Book of Mormon off of this. The Book of Mormon was essentially a plagiaristic literary effort following the King James Bible in existence in the 1830s in the United States. And he rewrote certain parts of it to fit his imagination. But a lot of it was copied, almost word for word. But he rewrote part of it. That's a graduate level course. But just to say, yes, he followed the practices recorded in the Old Testament that a man can have as many wives as he can support. Yeah. Gives you a sit back and go,
Not too smart.
Moment. What's that?
Not too smart.
Well, you know, when you start your own religion, you're probably missing a few in the upstairs neck.
Can you talk more about that Book of Mormon?
Book of Mormon?
Because I saw that Bible. It has the books are so different from the Bible that I know. I'm not saying that I'm coming from Africa, and I was so surprised. So who wrote those books? Were they inspired by the Holy Spirit?
No. They were inspired by the diseased imagination of Joseph Smith.
Oh, okay.
And I mean that literally. I took a psychology class in college, and abnormal psychology, and we were given profiles in the second semester of, you know, okay, this person, a mini biography. And then we were supposed to make an armchair or school classroom diagnosis of what is the prevailing condition. Is this paranoia? Is this schizophrenia? Is this
bipolar?
All the questions, yes, yes. And we had a checklist, we had the formulas, and we came out with our diagnoses. And then we talked about it in class and came down to a certain place where the teacher put up on an overhead slide. PowerPoint wasn't invented yet. Much easier in those days. You know, you could write it and then you could just stick it up there. And if you didn't like it, that didn't fix it. One of those profiles was Joseph Smith. It was a unanimous diagnosis that he was a megalomaniac, paranoia, with touches of schizophrenia. Sight unseen, this was blind profiles. We had no idea if these were even real. We were given them as case studies for the exercise of running diagnostics. The man was 100% off his rocker. And the things he wrote were militantly anti the God of the Bible, anti-Christ. But he dressed them all up as truth. If you read a biography of him, you find out that his grandfather was worse than a computer virus concerning organized religion. Joseph Smith grew up mostly raised by a man who said all organized religions are wrong. So he had to organize his own.
And see, and that's why he believed that there were no local churches that were truly preaching the gospel.
Correct. Therefore, he had to get his own spin on it. So the Book of Mormon, the Pearl of Great Price, the Writings, Doctrines, and Covenants, none of those are inspired scripture. They may include chunks of King James's. They're not inspired scripture. Yeah.
Would he be considered an anti-Semitic?
Yes, he would be considered an anti-Semitic. And he used the portions in the gospel of the Jews being the ones who killed Christ to foster that. But it wasn't original to him. It existed well before him. Well before him.
Well, these girls that Esau married were Hittites.
They were Hittites.
The Hittite religion was, if you can think of a god, we'll adopt him.
Yep.
And they had 10,000 gods or something like that.
I don't remember exactly the source, but yes, the Hittites were definitely polytheistic, multiple god followers. But like Dayton just said, if you can think of it, they would worship it.
Because they didn't want to offend anybody.
So no, we can't offend anybody. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
Heaven forbid you offend somebody by insisting there's only one God. Seems I think I saw a headline about that just last week. Yeah, a multiplicity of gods has always made people very comfortable because you can find one that fits who you are. If I invented my own, I would worship cats. And all the dog owners are going, wow, I love rabbit trails. I wouldn't worship rabbits, though.
They multiply too many.
I was thinking more about the fact that if you start worshiping rabbits, eventually you're going to get kicked in the butt. Sorry. Like I said, sometimes I get surprised by what comes out of my mouth. We've got currents of dysfunction showing up in chapter 27. Sorry, playing with alliteration this week. The full family fracture was culminating. Esau had already sold his birthright. Remember? Mm-hmm. Came in impulsively. Give me some of that red stuff. Yeah. I will on one condition. Jacob ran that scam. And he took away the birthright that belonged to the firstborn.
Yeah.
We already know what God thinks of necessity of firstborns. Esau was still the favorite of Isaac because he was the rugged outdoorsman. Jacob was the favorite of Rebekah because he was the quiet, civilized one who hung out in the tents and, you know, did whatever was there. He also knew what he was doing with herds and flocks. And now we get our Machiavellian moves. I know Machiavelli wasn't around, but perhaps he learned from these people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Esau is commissioned by Isaac to earn, and that's a term that is used, earn the blessing. That's the formal declaration of all rights, titles, and powers of a patriarch to a son. Do we earn the gift of God? We don't. But Isaac is kind of short-circuiting this because he loves that son better. Rebecca overhears this and plots for Jacob to get all of that instead. She's the one who is the runner of the household staff. Therefore, she has ears everywhere. So does Jacob. Call in the chief steward, call the maid. What were they talking about over there? It wasn't too big. Isaac was just telling him to go out and get him some good food and bring it back and he'd bless him.
Yeah,
exactly. Rebecca's antenna twitched fiercely on that.
She knew the shortcut.
She knew the shortcut. And we get an elaborate deception scheme built. Food plus fur plus finery equals fooled. Sorry. And then we get this ensuing mess that had permanent, dare I say, eternal fallout. We're told in more than one place in Scripture, Jacob have I loved, Esau have I hated. That's harsh. And yet, the net effect is the same. The whole manipulation succeeds. Rebecca plots and plans and says, you bring me a couple of young goats, and I'll make them taste just like wild game from out in the field. And then we're going to take the skin of those goats, and we're going to put them on your arms, and the sides of your neck, and on your face, so that you feel hairy. But wasn't Harry Esau's name? Yes, it was. God has a sense of humor. We'll make you Harry. And then she goes into Esau's quarters and pulls out his finest garments. These smell like Esau. She went after every sense she could get to pull this off. And Isaac gets fooled. Jacob appears, and we're told in the narrative, Jacob says, here I am, Father. He's nearly blind. He can barely see. He says, The voice is that of Jacob. Are you really Esau? He comes close enough, he puts the food down, he can smell the food, and he embraces this son. Huh, scratching on my cheek. He's furry. Yeah, he's furry. And he inhales the dust of the fields, the outdoorsman smell of the clothing. Okay, I'll bite, literally. He ate the food. So he eats Jacob's gift. This is Rebecca's imaginations, but yeah. And then he blesses Jacob. He eats, he's satisfied, he says, okay, upon you, my son, I confer the dew of heaven. Semi-arid land. Dew, up and down every morning, is going to keep our crops fertile. So he's blessing everything agriculturally grown. The fatness of the earth. Now, like the pastor was saying, you know, some people may deal with overindulgence in food. That's not what he's talking about. Fat comes from what source?
Flocks.
Flocks. Thank you for being a literature. Fat comes from flocks. It comes from the abundance of the herd. Fat was a necessary part of the diet. It still is a necessary part of the diet. It's just that Americans, we kind of take it to extremes.
I kind of think of this story is related to something kind of like a predestined.
A which?
Predestination.
Yes, predestination.
If you think about the what it starts from, when they were born, Esau came first, and then, Esau came first, and then Jacob grabbed his feet.
Holding on to his leg.
His leg. Yeah,
his foot. Like, wait, take me too. But, you're right.
Yeah.
God elects.
Yes, elects.
Chooses whom he will. And his will is the only will that will matter. Ever. So when you say fire at will, anybody named William should duck, but it means God's will. Yeah. Your brethren are to be subservient to you. Any further down the line from beyond Isaac and Esau, the descendants of Esau will serve the descendants of Jacob. And anybody that curses you, let them be cursed. Anybody that blesses you, let them be blessed. That's a powerful blessing. Massive crops, abundant flocks, and all livestock. All the rest of your kin are going to be subservient to you or your descendants.
Just an observation. God chose Jacob because he was a keeper of the flock. Esau was lord over. And if you look at Jesus, you see the same thing. Jesus, he didn't come to be like Esau. He came as a keeper of the flock.
I am the good
shepherd.
To go along with what you said, in where is it? In Psalm 75, 6 and 7, because I was applying for position at the moment, and I had three or four top people who go recommend me and all like that. And I had to learn this for no one on earth, from east or west, or even from the wilderness, can raise up another man. It is God alone who judges. He decides who will rise and who will fall. So,
yes, he does.
Yeah.
And Paul elaborates that in Romans 13 about authorities. No authority exists on earth that has not been established by God. And this is exactly the same thing here. God chose the younger. He eats, he blesses, Jacob exit stage right. Esau, enter stage left. It's like a bad play. Yes. And the scriptural word is, no sooner had Jacob left than Esau entered. Whoa. Father, arise and eat. Who are you? Can you see it?
Bro.
He's going, oh my goodness, what? Why? Why your son? Your firstborn son, Esau. Well, then wait a minute. Who was that?
When we look back at Cain and Abel, Cain was a vegetarian, so to speak, and Abel was the herdsman. And here we're looking at Jacob and Esau, and Esau was the outdoorsy guy, and Jacob was kind of the vegetarian. I mean, there's
he was cooking lentil stew that day, yeah.
It's just kind of interesting that this
flipped it over.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it goes, it comes back to God sovereignly appoints whom he will appoint for the tasks he has.
Amen.
You know, we get that old saying about the Lord works in mysterious ways to his wonders to perform. Oh my goodness. It's a wonder we're gonna get anywhere. All of a sudden, Isaac, everything just collapses in on him. Uh-oh. I ate and blessed the first one who got here. He shall be blessed. Can't take this back. And there would have been enough household servants around that heard most of that, that, yeah, he's got witnesses. And the bitterness roots in deeply on both of them. Isaac kicking himself for being deceived. Esau, what about me? He's all about me, remember? Lives in the moment. He's impulsive, a little bit reckless. But he's demonstrating that continuing focus on me. Just like he got named, huh? My brother deceived us. One of the meanings of the word Jacob is deceives or deceiver. Kind of underhanded, but Jacob won. He won the big prize. Isaac was still holding, I can somehow turn this to my favor with my favored son. Well,
he can't believe it.
Yeah, he clearly intended Esau as primary heir. He preferred him over Jacob, that mousy little guy that hung around the tent. Ran some herds, you know. God sovereignly blocked that move. Mysterious ways, his wonders to be performed. All of that plotting, all of that backroom dealing, all of that cooking up a plan that ended up working exactly how God wanted it to. You mean he uses bad stuff? Oh yeah, he does. I told you about, you know, like my dream was the Air Force Academy when I was growing up. And something bad happened to me and I couldn't go. And now you're stuck with me.
So are you saying that like Rebecca was some kind of prophetess or something because God used her?
If we look back to when she was first pregnant and she had a war going on inside, inside of her, it was a very difficult, struggling pregnancy, and she inquired of God, and he said to her right then, and she held this throughout the boys' lives, two nations are in your womb.
Yes.
And the younger will be the overlord of the older. She had already been let in on the secret. The older will serve the younger.
So are you saying then the end justifies the means?
No. I can't say that. Because that opens the door on a human level to all kinds of stuff.
Well, she was human.
She was human. But that gives rise to Stalin, Hitler, Kim Jong-il. The ends, my ends, justify any means I want to use to achieve them. This was God working. Yes, he gave her some knowledge. Yes, it probably colored all the way through. And yes, it put her in a position to ensure Jacob got it all. That's human manipulation, but it's God's sovereignty superintending the results.
Yeah, but what Rebecca did was wrong.
Many would see it that way.
And she's accountable for her.
And she's accountable for her own actions. Yes.
That's the dilemma.
Yes. And hence the very human dilemma of, I see an outcome, I want it, but we have to be careful how we go about it. She didn't make any bones about the fact that we're going to do this, Jacob. We're going to fool your dad. We're going to get you the whole shebang. And we're not going to take Esau's feelings into account at all. Was it wrong? It was done in a wrong way. Yes. Did it mesh with God's sovereign plan? Yes. What we don't know, jump forward a couple thousand years. Well, probably about 1700 years at this point. Jump forward. The Jews, the leadership, were used of God to put Christ on the cross. Were they wrong? Absolutely. Judas was used of God to betray Jesus to that same leadership. Jesus himself said, it would be better for the one who betrays me to have not been born. And yet, it had to happen. That was a sovereignly appointed must for Jacob to be the line of promise. Was a sovereignly appointed must. But again, I fall back on, not everything that the Bible records does it teach. We don't have an example here of how we should act to get our way. Yes?
And Esau was very blessed. He was wealthy.
He was exceptionally wealthy. And he became a full nation in his own right, the nation of Edom. The prophecy bears out in the way later on, even though Edom was subservient, they eventually were subsumed by the Israelite community. Nuts. I knew I was in trouble trying to bite off this much.
That's all right, we've got next week. And
we've got next week.
And you're doing it
anyway. Yeah. Esau ended up begging for everything he could get. And the blessing is paralleled, but it's really fascinating. He gets blessed from the fatness of the land. You shall live from the fatness of the land, but it's away from. The participle used was away from. You shall live from the dew. Away from the dew. You'll live by the sword. You'll serve your brother. Eventually, you'll throw off that yoke. Took about 500 years to do that. Maybe a little more. Good thing Rebecca has spies. Esau swears to murder his brother after Papa's done. Heaven forbid I shame myself in front of my favorite dad. She hears about it. She sends Jacob north, go to your brother's family. Stay there till he calms down. When I send for you, you come back. And then Rebecca says to Isaac, my life is no longer worth living because Esau has taken these Hittite women. Her heart sickness finally wakes up Isaac, and he grabs Jacob and he says, look, don't you dare take a local wife and kill my wife. Go to Padan Aram, that's mixed fertile crescent. Marry a cousin. Excuse me? Marry a cousin? The family tree is descending. But it was a thin enough link that, yes, it was still appropriate. Isaac finally buys into God's plan, restates the tripartite blessing over Jacob. Be fruitful, multiply, the blessing of Abraham, meaning all nations, blessed through him, possess the land as promised. They were living here. Go up here to the clan. Marry someone from there. Let's keep this family intact. All right. Here's our principles. God is 100% sovereign. Always. His plans will happen. You know, we see that motivational poster, lead follower, get out of the way. God says, follow or don't.
Don't you have to, you have to do some of the work also.
You have to be open. You got to move. If he tells you to go somewhere, you got to start walking, don't you?
Like, you don't want to fight his plans.
You're right. Isaac found out that he could not short-circuit God's plan. He wanted Esau. God said, no, I don't want Esau. I want Jacob. And you're right.
You kind of have to open your heart.
Oh, my goodness. No, I don't want to open my heart. I could get hurt.
You stop.
But you're right. You're right. It requires that openness to the Spirit of God. And that's, for human beings who like to control things, that's a risky proposition.
Yeah.
But we can't forget that God is the one who will make his plans happen. And whether we go along with them or not, sometimes we're on the outside looking in. We need to align our plans with his. Matthew?
It makes me think of David had two opportunities to kill Saul, but left it up to God to remove Saul. And whereas it still came out God's sovereign plan.
Yes, it did. And you're right. David had two really easy opportunities to take out Saul. Didn't take it. It's not my job. God's the one who has to do this. And he stayed with the plan. Here's the question. Are we open to his plans? Do we trust his plans? If we're going to trust his plans, how do we demonstrate that trust?